Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, with free HRT announced in the budget and BBC's Panorama tackling the topic of menopause this week, I'll be asking Catherine O'Keefe if women's hormonal health is finally getting the attention it deserves. And Aware's Mental Health Week takes place this week, encompassing World Mental Health Day. On Thursday, I'll be meeting their clinical director, Dr. Susan Brannock, and Brent Pope, mental health advocate. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I was sick this week. A pillar of health has been toppled and I've had some sort of virus or head cold for a few days. So I have had to embrace rest, which I must say I struggled with. At the start, it was quite nice. Sunday papers, stayed in my pajamas. I was thinking this is good, because if reincarnation is a thing, I reckon I was definitely a cat at some stage in my life. I'm definitely into the lounging, particularly in a sunny spot, if possible. I do stick to washing in the shower and eat with a knife and fork, but the lounging part I definitely have down. Monday, I was kind of happy to skip the gym and potter about at my own pace. But come Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I just start to feel lethargic. I miss exercise for my mind and it just gets frustrating. But I really do think you just have to give your body a chance to rest. And I was hosting a seminar for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is October. I always think it's funny when people say, it's October, where did the time go? I mean, I know it flies, I get that, but we really do know how and when it goes. Anyway, back to October being Awareness Month for Breast Cancer. There are 8 signs and symptoms of breast cancer, and early detection is essential. We have made major advancements for the survival rate of breast cancer and new treatments. So the message is, know you're normal, check regularly and seek help. And for more, go to breastcancerireland.com. And it's a week out now from TEDx Tralee. Getting prepped for my talk has rather consumed me. But look, I'm also excited about it and trying to remain focused on the incredible experience that it will be. And what an opportunity and an honour to be asked. There are some tickets left at TEDxTralee.com. And I'll be sharing the stage with such a mix of incredible speakers. If you live in the south of the country or you fancy a weekend in the kingdom, would highly recommend. This time next week, it'll pretty much be over. TEDxTralee.com. And if you want to email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, it seems we're talking about the menopause more than ever before. And why not too? Finally, women's health is getting the attention it deserves. But there's still a way to go. Catherine O'Keefe, the wellness warrior, is a menopause coach and author and organiser of the Menopause Success Summit. And she joins me in studio now. Catherine, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire.
We have come a long way, haven't we? I mean, I'm 5 years presenting this show and I remember you coming on 5 years ago and it was quite new then, whereas now menopause it's a big business.
For sure. I mean, the last 5 years have just been so fast and so much has happened and so much, you know, so much great things have happened, you know, and particularly this week, like the announcement, free HRT, which is fantastic. And I think now, you know, but at the same time, we don't want to lose the momentum. We have to kind of keep that going. There's still a lot we have to do, but we're on the right trajectory. I think it's just we don't want to take our foot off the pedal. That's the way I look at it.
Can I ask you about the free HRT? Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, it is a very positive move. It sends out a message from government that they're taking menopause and women's health seriously. But what about the HRT shortages? Is that not going to further compound this issue?
It probably is, because when we look at the shortages, and the big one being estradiol, the most common patch, the substitutions that are coming in, a lot of women are unfortunately finding issues with them, you know, maybe the adhesiveness of the patch, etc. Now, with free HRT coming in January, it will probably put more pressure on supply and demand. And we know the issue isn't, it's not a local issue. It's not just an Ireland issue. It's a global issue. And it's all down to the fact there isn't enough supply. There isn't enough of these products being made of the various types. And right now, the patch is the big one. A lot of women are switching to use the gel instead. And I think I can nearly see what's going to happen is that the gel is probably going to come under pressure, you know, until we get to a stage where there is more companies, pharmaceuticals that are actually manufacturing more, a higher volume of HRT products, particularly the transdermals to support women. So there's no quick fix to that one because that's a much bigger industry global conversation. And I know talking to colleagues in North America, particularly in the US, exact same issues. The UK, exact same issues.
We have sort of blasted a lot of the myths around HRT, particularly that paper that came out years ago where there was a connection made between HRT and breast cancer. And since we've began to talk more and educate women more about that risk being minimal.
But
HRT was also the topic of the BBC documentary Panorama during the week, and it was quite a controversial one.
It was. I think it was a 30-minute documentary, and I think probably 3-4 minutes were given to talking about the billion-dollar industry that now is menopause. And I think it's very good that that was part of it. And because I think, look, we're seeing, you know, do I need a shower gel for my vagina for issues? No, I don't. The vagina is self-cleaning, so I don't need these products. And there's many products from skincare to supplements to pajamas that are coming on the market. And, you know, there's excellent products out there, particularly when you look at supplements and skincare. But what's really important is looking at the ingredients and understanding what you're looking for in anything that you're using. So I think it brought spotlight on that, which is very important in relation to, you know, really people looking at evidence-based information behind anything that they're using. So that was one small part of it. And then the 23 minutes or so was given over to looking at the UK clinic, which is run by Dr. Louise Newson, and the practices they have around HRT prescribing. And it was really just, again, putting a spotlight on the fact that they would prescribe high dosage levels of estrogen, which would fall outside the guidance of the British Menopause Society, the International Menopause Society, etc. What's important about that, though, Claire, is that some women will work very well within the standard guidelines. So, you know, your patch dosages can go from 12.5 up to 100, maybe, and that would be the kind of the standard that the BMS would recognise. For some women, though, they might have to go to 125, they might have to go to 150. Once they're working with a doctor who's experienced, qualified in relation to menopause specialist, that's really important. Now, if we look at some of the dosages that they were giving out, where you're talking about 250, 300, again, it's going to be very individual, and it's understanding, you know, the individual nature of why those levels were prescribed. But I think certainly, like, I got so many messages after the documentary, and Claire, the common question was, what is a high dose? And I found that really interesting because it was kind of like, okay, so people aren't looking at the fact that, you know, what is a regular dose? You know, 50 would be considered 50 would be considered kind of standard. So 75 is a little bit higher, 100 is higher again, and it'll be different depending whether you're using a gel, spray, patch, etc. So that's again where it's so important that we know what we're putting into our bodies and that we understand any implications. And I think one big thing that Panorama was drawing to was the fact that it should be informed between the patient and the doctor. So that there's, you know, all the information is given in relation to any risks or any concerns there might be with these high dosages. And then I think, well, the big thing is that obviously if you're given high dose estrogen, you also have to look at what's happening if for the, you know, someone who has a uterus in terms of what's happening with progesterone, what's happening with uterine lining. And that's really important. So it certainly, you know, drew attention to an aspect that, you know, it does need to be looked at. It does need to be talked about. You know, are there other clinics in the UK who are doing the same? I don't know. that may come to light, you know, over the coming months. But I think certainly from the point of view of working with your doctor who is working with you in a supportive, collaborative relationship, to me, that is fundamental. Because I know with my doctor, I can ask her anything and we can have a conversation. And it's like talking to a friend in terms of, okay, I don't understand this. I don't get what you're saying. And is this dose okay? Or should I do this or X, Y, or Z? You know, for example, another one that a lot of people aren't aware of is around local vaginal estrogen. So if you follow the standard treatment for local vaginal estrogen for 1 year, it's the equivalent of one oral HRT tablet. Whereas a lot of women actually think this could be higher. So that's, again, it's all about having the information and understanding that, okay, you know, what is this in the bigger scheme of things? What do I need to be aware of? And most importantly, it's my body. And, you know, it's making informed choices in relation to supporting yourself.
And that's where the messaging is so important. And I know you're huge on that. It's really important that everyone had their voice heard in this conversation. But there was a lot of scaremongering. So people instantly say, whatever I need to take, just give it to me. And you know, when I think of the fabulous pharmacist Laura Dowling on this program, telling me that a lot of her friends were saying, look, I'm not even in perimenopause, but will I just go on HRT now to sidestep all of that? So I think that's really important, getting the information. Tell me about the Menopause Success Summit, because that's what it's all about, because everyone's journey is going to be individual. HRT is not going to be for everybody.
No, and I think there's a few things in that. And, you know, one of my questions with the government now is, it is brilliant we've free HRT, but what about the women who cannot take HRT or who want to opt for a different treatment choice? What supports are going to be put in place for them? But the individual nature of menopause is why, to me, the Menopause Success Summit is so important, because it has to be clarity. I know what I felt when I started in perimenopause, and I was like, where do you go to? Who do you talk to? There was nothing. It was like a desert. Whereas now we've nearly gone the other way. There's so much information. But what's really important is that you're able to get the information from really trusted resources. And it's something I am so picky about, because I've just seen too many women who've been misled. And that's why the summit is all about listening to the experts, knowing that you're getting the latest information in relation to, you know, HRT, testosterone. We've Dr. Caoimhe Hartley, Dr. Nicola Cochrane. We also are, you know, looking at nutrition. We're talking about exercise. So the lifestyle aspect is really big as well, because for me, you can have your management options medically, like HRT, non-hormonal, etc. You can have your complementary therapies, but you have to have the foundation. And the foundation to me is the lifestyle. So your movement, your food, exercise, you know, your mental health, all of that. So the summit is about bringing all of that together. And most importantly, it's clarity. It really is clarity. Because I just know my own journey. And I know that the importance of understanding, okay, this is 100%. Now I can make a decision based on what I just heard there from maybe Dr. Nicola Cochrane or whoever it is. And I know, okay, I'm good to go. I have the right information.
Yeah, get all the information and then decide what is right for you as an individual. Well, you'll find out more information and get tickets at menopausesuccesssummit.com. It's on the 19th of October in Dunleary in Dublin. You can also get Catherine's book, All You Need to Know About Menopause. Might have you back to talk about postmenopause. I've had a lot of women who say they feel that that's forgotten. We're focusing on perimenopause and menopause and we're forgetting. So let's get back to the cohort another time. But that address again is menopausesuccesssummit.com. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
AWARE's Mental Health Week takes place this week, encompassing World Mental Health Day, which is on Thursday. This year's campaign will highlight the unique yet universal experience of depression through a powerful new portrait series, Hope in Focus, by acclaimed photographer Enda Bow, which will be unveiled at the Royal Hibernian Academy of Arts on World Mental Health Day. Every person in the portrait series has experience of depression, with the 14 photographs featuring a diverse group of individuals to include familiar faces such as Mary Black, Brent Pope, McLean Burke, Hugh Wallace, Emer O'Neill and David Gillick. I'm joined in studio now by Dr. Susan Brannock, who is Clinical Director at AWARE, and Brent Pope, Mental Health Advocate and co-founder of Elephant in the Room. Well, you're both very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Susan, I think it's important that I gave some of those names, be it the well-known faces within the campaign, but to show the diverse range of people, and especially people that we would see out and about often on stage. And that kind of feeds to the stigma and the misunderstanding we have about depression.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and I suppose the depression is a very diverse experience, you know, so there's a similarity for many people. So we know in terms of depression, it can affect how you're thinking. So kind of negative thoughts maybe about yourself, about the future, about other people. It can affect what you're doing. So maybe withdrawing from kind of things that used to matter to you or used to give you enjoyment, and also affects your emotions, of course. So as well as feeling low, people can often feel kind of feelings of anger, of irritability. So it's a whole range of experience. And you're really right to mention the stigma, and that's what we're wanting to do in our campaign, is really to challenge those ideas that it only happens to certain people or it means something about the person. We've come a really long way, I think, in Ireland in terms of having these conversations about mental health, but there's still a lot of stigma that can affect people. Some of the stats would suggest that probably about half of the people who are living with depression don't seek professional help. That's a really significant number, and there can be loads of reasons as to why someone might not, you know. The first step maybe of seeking help is recognising that something's wrong. So that's having to recognise what the symptoms of depression are. And that's why we do a lot of work in AWARE around education, so understanding what it actually is. And then it's about seeking help in terms of maybe making that intention, either to contact a GP or to contact someone like AWARE, like our phone line, which is open 10 in the morning till 10 at night, or one of our support groups. And then there's actually doing it. It's actually going and seeking the help. So there's a lot of steps maybe in terms of first recognising that maybe your mood is quite low, to getting to the point to getting help. And stigma is a huge part of a block that can present itself for many people. They might think, well, this is just how it is. This is just who I am. Nothing's going to help me. Maybe if I go to the GP, they're not going to understand. There are lots of very common ideas that people might have. In our survey that we had done last year, we found that people, when they did seek help, they actually found it to be a positive experience. So the people who took the leap and spoke to their GP or mental health professional found it really helpful. So I guess it's really that kind of that call to action, really, that if you are struggling, if you're listening to this and feeling very low or feeling that maybe having some dark thoughts, which can often be a part of depression too, it's about kind of seeking help. Part of our campaign as well is about opening up our education programs. So they're based on cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a therapy that looks at understanding thinking and feeling. So these groups aren't therapy programs, but they're a bit of an education program around understanding what depression is and developing skills and techniques to manage mood and to kind of challenge anxiety. So I guess if anyone's kind of listening, maybe having a look on our website as well, aware.ie.
It's interesting you mentioned some of the different facets of depression, and you've a brilliant anagram up on, or acronym up on your website, Festival, and each stands for some of the things you touched on. Low energy, low self-esteem, loss of interest in hobbies, family or social life. Because even though we're talking a lot more about mental health, we still don't quite have emotional literacy, do we? I think that Disney Pixar movie Inside Out is doing great work with kids to label emotions, but we tend to have sort of good emotions and bad emotions, and we have to avoid bad emotions as much as possible. Whereas that sort of lethargy and, you know, checking out of life, that's not something people might necessarily associate with depression.
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of loss of motivation, as we say, maybe loss of energy, maybe it's about kind of waking up not just one day, but day after day after day for weeks, not feeling rested, even though maybe someone might have been sleeping for, you know, 8-10 hours, but not feeling restorative kind of sleep and really struggling to get on with the day. Now, all of us have a day that it's hard to get going. That's normal. And I guess, but it's maybe if you're noticing that day after day, and that's getting into maybe then not enjoying things, as we said, and maybe changes in appetite as well. That can be another aspect of depression. So maybe eating more than you might usually, or eating less. So eating and food and sleep is probably the two main signals that maybe something is shifting, as well as kind of how you're thinking. I think it's really important, as you say, we have an idea that you shouldn't feel angry, you have to feel happy. And that's the kind of deal that you kind of have. And we all feel angry from time to time, or frustrated or irritable or jealous, all these emotions that we've decided are not to be experienced. I suppose what we know in terms of kind of positive mental health, and this is why we're offering a mindfulness-based program in AWARE as well, is that the more you can kind of check in with yourself and say, well, how am I actually feeling? Okay, so I feel this about this situation, and this is how I might choose to react to it. So I suppose there was a recent study that came up that people who understood where their emotion had come from. So I feel angry because, you know, someone cut me up in the traffic earlier. So that's maybe being able to link the kind of rationale as to the emotion can help emotional regulation, which is, I guess, just a way of saying kind of how we cope with emotions. So how we might recognize them and respond to them, and ideally kind of maybe kind of allow them to come and go. When we tend to not allow difficult emotions, then they tend to hang around. And I guess that's, so it's about kind of understanding yourself and your emotional landscape, really, is a positive part of mental health.
Tell us a bit about the exhibition then, Hope in Focus.
Yeah, so that's starting in the Royal Hibernian on the 10th of October, which is World Mental Health Day. And obviously we have a range of people photographed by Enda Bowe, which is really amazing to see, as we were saying, the range, the kind of diversity of people living with depression. It's really to challenge stigma, to say, to kind of, I guess, to explain that depression is something that can affect any one of us, you know, or a man, or maybe someone that we love. So it's really kind of wanting to have those conversations. Part of the World Suicide Day in September and World Mental Health Days is really about starting conversations with people about mental health.
And Brent, you are featured in the exhibition.
Yes, one of the male models.
Indeed, yeah. We have him here, Face Model Zone. It's not the first time you've put your face to discussing depression, though, of course, and you've spoken at length about the stigma that you felt, shame.
Absolutely.
That you felt weak as a man to admit that you'd gone through this.
Yeah, everything Susan says resonates with me. In fact, you know, psychiatrists and psychotherapists will know there's something in countertransference. When she's talking, I'm just thinking, wow, that was my life. So, yes, I've been speaking about my own mental health experiences for maybe 15 to 20 years now, trying to give some sort of platform with somebody that was well-known in sport and the media. Just to say, look, it's not weak to speak. That's why I created the Elephant in the Room movement, because for me, that's where it starts. In my generation, there wasn't a lot of help out there. You know, who did you turn to? Especially if you're an aspiring young New Zealand rugby player coming from a macho background, a farming background, a small rural town. I just thought that, you know, to reach out and even talk to my father or somebody like that, let alone teammates or friends, I just thought that I'm not a real man here. I can't deal with it myself. And that's where the shame and the guilt comes. You're told every day somebody has real problems. And that's where the guilt comes from. You say, well, why should I be feeling this way? And I say to people now, it's a bit like when people, something happens in their life that, you know, they don't want it. It's not a case of saying, why me? Sometimes it's a case of saying, why not me? You know, why couldn't I have suffered depression? I've suffered depression and anxiety and suicidal thoughts most of my life. It's just how I deal with it now. I'm in a better place to deal with it because I've learnt my triggers and I've learnt how to deal with them, what I've got to do. Yes, there'll be bad days, but there'll be good days too. But what it starts for me is just telling somebody about it. If you're listening to this and you're in a place and you're having dark thoughts more than regular, this depression isn't just, as Susan made out, just isn't feeling low one particular day. It's when it continues and becomes a negative impact in your life in all ways. Socially, I would find myself withdrawing, although the hard thing for people to understand is depression is irrational. We know that, but a lot of us mask it out there. So our portrayal of who we are at work or who we are in the media, or who we are in a sports team or who we are in life is sometimes a length away from who you really are, because you don't want people to know. So you put up this facade of who you are, you know, the happy-go-lucky person, the person that has no worries at work. The number of times I get calls, and I'm sure Susan does as well, but people come back to me and say, you know, you met John or whatever a few months ago or whatever at work or something. He was the go-to guy. He was the happy guy. He was the social guy. He's gone. You know, he's taken his own life. And that's terrifying for people because there was no clues. Sometimes there is no clues that somebody's feeling like that unless you're willing to share it. And so my first way of sharing that was a phone call to the Samaritans that literally save my life. So I had to take that step. I knew there was something wrong. I knew I couldn't get help at that stage. I didn't know I couldn't get help. I didn't know where to find help because I was told the things that often a lot of men are told. You know, man up, toughen up, harden up. Real men don't cry. Well, yes, they do, actually. You know, and it's a case of being vulnerable with your feelings, recognising your emotions, as Susan said, and said, hey, you know, I'm starting to go down that laneway that I don't want to go to. And that's the time. You just need to get on the phone. You need to talk to someone. You need to have a friend or someone you can be trust to call and say, hey, I'm struggling with this. And for that person, not to tell you what works for them or what they should and shouldn't do, but just to say, I'm here as a friend or as a partner or as a doctor, whatever. I'm here to listen and I'm there to go hand in hand with you to get the help you need. And don't feel ashamed. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel anything these back. Just we want people just to recover. Too many people take their own lives. Let's face it, too many people take their own lives in Ireland. You know, yet where are we signposted to it? We want to avoid using the word suicide, people taking their own lives. And that's where the stigma comes from. And we should be talking about it more. We should be saying, okay, this person is in a dangerous place in their lives and they need help. That's the stigmatisation for me. I'm sick of skirting around the fact, to be honest, after so many years. I'm sick of people telling me things are changing because I don't see a lot of change out there, to be honest. I don't. Who are they talking to? What are they talking about? I think are the important questions. We can all say, oh, yes, everybody's talking more about mental health. But we have a whole new generation of problems. I didn't have to grow up with TikTok or Facebook or expectation. I didn't have to grow up with mobile phones and bullying, social media bullying. All these things are new generational problems. That's what they should be talking about. Young people should be talking about.
And for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about the work you do at Elephant in the Room.
The Elephant in the Room was just, I tried to peer back things to the simplest thing. And I thought everything starts after a conversation, not before a conversation. So when companies, organisations come to me and say, we're doing this brilliant job out there with all these services and all that, great. I'm all for that. That is absolutely brilliant. But I said, where's the way to get those people to use the services? Because I'm sure, like Susan, I get a lot of companies come back to me and say, look, we've spent thousands on this wonderful website that we're trying to get people to use, and they've got all these services available to them while they're working for us. And I'm just saying, how many people used it last month? And they're coming back to me in masses and saying, not as many people as we thought. And I said, it's because there's still stigma associated with you going onto a site, even though you might think it's confidential. What you're thinking in the back of your mind as somebody that's suffering from depression or anxiety or suicidal thoughts, what you're actually thinking is, oh, I hope somebody's not overlooking the shoulder of this and saying, okay, this person isn't suitable for a role in HR in a couple of years because they came onto the site, you know, somewhat anonymous. They don't think it's anonymous. So you'll get more people using Aware, the Samaritans, and that their own website. What I'm saying to people is, if you're in a workplace where people have these wonderful services available to you, use them. Be powerful enough or courageous enough or brave enough. I don't want to be called brave or courageous. I take those words back. I just want to be seen as normal. That somebody that recognised I had problems in my life and I was forthright enough to say, look, okay, I can't deal with them myself. I need help. That's all I'm trying to say with the elephant in the room. We all know, if I say to you now, what's your elephant in the room? You will know. It's some place you don't want to go. It's some place you find a bit awkward, whether it's discussing a relationship, whether it's discussing school or work or whatever. You just say, oh, just leave it alone at the moment. What I'm saying to people is we all have elephants in our lives. We all have somewhere that we don't like to go. A problem so often shared is a problem halved too, that if you can go to somebody and say, hey, I'm a bit worried about this. Something's happened. I've broken up with my partner. I'm going through a bad marriage breakup. I've lost my investments. Whatever it is for you, try sharing it with someone. Try being more vulnerable in everyday life and say, okay, because that person will come back to you 9 times out of 10 and say, hey, I went through the same thing last year myself. You know, I know people that have been through marriage breakups. I know people that have lost all their investments. Or I know people like that. They just get, it's like the U2 song. I was just talking to Adam Clayton yesterday. It's like the U2 song, stuck in the moment and can't get out of it. That's the way that you feel. I'm just telling people, let's not allow people to get stuck in that moment. Let's get to them before that moment occurs. And that is by talking. Simple as that. It's just by talking and sharing it. So if you are feeling, if you're in a dark place today and you're sitting down in a lonely space, and I've been that person too, sitting down the end of your bed somewhere in rural Ireland, it doesn't even have to be rural Ireland, somewhere in the city, and you're contemplating the unthinkable for people, just know that there's hope out there. If you just make that first step, somebody always cares. Somebody always cares. And that's what people say to me, that they need to know that there's somebody out there that cares. You've just got to find that person in your hour of need or your minute of need or when you get stuck in the moment. And know, as Susan said, there's a full chance of recovery from this.
Yeah, and it's such an important message. You're an incredible voice on this. I'm hanging on your every word, but I better take a quick break. You are listening to Alive and Kicking here on News Talk with Claire McKenna, and we are talking about World Mental Health Day taking place this week, and I'm joined in studio by the clinical director at AWARE, Dr. Susan Brannock and Brent Pope.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
I was saying to Brent, he's such an important voice in all of this, Susan, before the break, because he speaks from the heart, he speaks honestly. But he's right, we've come a long way, and yet we talk more, but we're still a long way to go. We need to be still making those steps forward. We're talking about it, but we still don't exactly know what to do with it, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly voices like Brent is really helpful, I guess, in terms of, as you say before the break there, kind of about finding that person who cares, and also knowing that there is hope there. But also those kind of conversations open up a space that maybe the other person might be able to share some vulnerability. So that, I guess, that's the kind of conversations that we're hoping to have around kind of mental health, not just for this week, but all the time, you know. So we have, as you say, kind of come a long way in terms of being better at kind of labeling depression, or maybe as a culture and a society saying, well, maybe depression and anxiety are things that are certainly affecting people all across the country. So we do have more work to do, I think, maybe also in terms of government funding, though, for mental health services. We've just recently had the budget there. We're seeing mental health allocations still at a 6% when World Health Organization recommends 10 to 11%. So it's still underfunded. So there's a whole load of work that we as individuals can do, and that's really, really important. So in terms of from the person experiencing depression or if someone who cares about them, there's work that there's kind of what we can do. But there's also what, as a society, that we can do in a broader scale, and I guess the importance of funding following policy in terms of mental health services.
Yeah, absolutely. Access to mental health supports for young people and adults is not nearly where it should be, and that sends out an incredible message. You also have a free webinar this week. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our webinar this week is talking more about depression again. So that's hosted by myself. And we'll have people with lived experience kind of talking about their experience of depression on that webinar. So that's on Wednesday. We run webinars in AWARE the second Wednesday of every month. And you can find the whole catalogue of them on our website as well. And as I was mentioning before the break as well, we have a whole range of education programmes that are open for registration. So for anyone who's interested in mental health or maybe wants to learn more about how they might manage anxiety or maybe changes in mood, as well as people experiencing depression, those programs are open for registration. As I said, they're based on cognitive behavioral therapy principles, really, really kind of practical groups that kind of offer kind of an explanation of depression and anxiety and how you might manage symptoms and difficulties around that in order to kind of make changes.
And I don't think you need to be somebody going through something to be interested in this, because it could be a loved one, it could be a colleague. We all need to get more literate and informed on this, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And in part of our education programme series, we offer a relatives and friends group as well. So that's for someone maybe who might be caring about a loved one or worried about someone, and that's a space, that's a group program where people come together and learn more about depression, about bipolar disorder, as well as how they can mind their own mental health, as well as supporting someone else. So there's maybe a bit of, as to what Brent was saying, there's a whole range of different support and services out there. It's about finding the one that's going to connect best with you. Some things may not suit you, but something else will. So it's a case of kind of finding that and having a look and maybe connecting with it in order to make those changes.
Now, something you said before the break hit a note with me, and it wasn't just the cool name drop of Adam Clayton, but it was the song title and a moment, that this can be a moment in your life. And I think that's important that we have hope. I mean, it's still very much meshed in who you are and your story, but it can be a moment in time.
Absolutely. And that's why The Elephants was created, because I want the elephants, when they're sitting here for you, or when young people especially see an elephant, it represents two things to me because of my life. It represents hope. There's hope of change, and there's hope of recovery, and there's hope of help, and permission. Permission to talk more vulnerably, more openly about mental health issues and get it out in the open. That's what the elephant represents. So I want people to come into a business place or something, or a sports club or a foyer somewhere, and see an elephant there wonderfully painted, and go over and read the plaque, because all the plaque says that while you're in here, you're in a safe place and you're in a place where someone cares. And how empowering is that for people to know that they're in a place where somebody has thought about their mental health? Because we can skirt around this all day long. Some organisations or some people out there just don't care to do anything about it. And yet it's the biggest problem area. But here's the kicker for me. If we know that the biggest costs in business are people not turning up for work or taking days off work for other reasons, saying a sports injury or something like that, when it's mental health, employee retention, all these are biggest costs in business. And yet the two reasons for those, one and two around the world, are anxiety and depression. And yet the lowest spend or the lowest budget for most companies is on mental health. It doesn't make sense to me. The way I talk about it in a coaching, you know, because I've coached many teams and I've been coached with some of the best rugby coaches in the world, the best way you can get the best out of your players or your environment is by creating a safe, happy environment. Life is all about, I see, a big pizza. You've got to get all the slices to have the perfect kind of life. Few people do, and nobody does. But that's the way of looking at it. So you look at how they're getting on outside of the rugby game, you know, how their relationships with their partners or their parents, you know, are they looking after themselves? Are they hydrating? All these problems come into to one whole big pizza, is the way I see it. So the elephant just represents the starting point for me, that somebody cares, and hope and permission. And that's all I wanted to say, because for me, that would have meant the world to me when I was growing up. If I'd just known somebody cared, if I'd gone into a rugby club in those days and I'd seen an elephant there, I would look strange at the time when I went over and read the plaque and said, it's okay not to feel okay, or whatever those, you know, that we use. I would have known that, hey, somebody is thinking just like me. Somebody is in that situation where they care, that they've thought about it at the very least. And that would just give me permission to say, maybe I'm going to take that little short step further ahead and say, look, is there somebody out there I can talk to? Because I couldn't find anybody to talk to, sadly. And it nearly cost me my life.
And yet here you are making a difference. Where can people find out more about Elephant in the Room?
Just to go on the site and have a look. Just on that, when I was name dropping about Adam Clayton, I've just finished a series for the last 6 months I've been filming called The Elephant in the Room. It'll come out on YouTube. I think we're launching out in Premier Sports, actually, unusually first. But talking to guys like David Gillick, talking to Hannah Toole, you say Adam Clayton, Marion Keyes, PJ Gallagher, just about different areas of their mental health and how they come through it. Because the lesson has to be that everybody has problems in their life, and how those people that managed it. And just talking to what I would say, not necessarily celebrities or sports stars, but just people in a work situation that have gone through grief. We've got Fiona Toomey, the founder of Hug, that lost her daughter Millie at such a young age, just to go through how people process grief. Adam talks about his, you know, drive to success and where that line from the song comes stuck in the moment, and also about addiction. Marion talks about depression. PJ Gallo talks about the shame of going to get psychiatric care. I just wanted a net of people telling their own stories. Sometimes Hannah talked about so eloquently yesterday, just finished, about eating disorders, because I didn't understand. I didn't understand how somebody largely female could look in the mirror and see themselves as being ugly or fat or whatever like that, and it nearly costing their lives, that thought pattern. I just couldn't understand, because I hadn't experienced that. I experienced other aspects.
And it just goes to show, talking is the first step.
It's the first step.
Yeah, amazing. Well, Brent Pope, thank you so much. And for all about the campaign, not just for this week or Mental Health Day, but it's ongoing. You can also go to aware.ie. Clinical Director of Aware, Dr. Susan Brannock, and Brent Pope, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
So that is it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.
The sun's blazing and the pavement sizzling. Time for My Mochi Ice Cream. My Mochi is little scoops of cool, creamy ice cream wrapped in soft, chewy dough.
It comes in tons of amazing flavors, like strawberry, mango, and cookies and cream. Gluten-free, snack-ready, and just 70 calories a piece. My Mochi's perfect for pool days, barbecues, and just chilling with your crew. When the heat's on, grab a purple box of My Mochi ice cream. Pop one. Cool down. Joyfully chill.